Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, everybody. My guest today is Marga Gray. Marga is an occupational therapist and has extensive clinical experience and extensive business experience. But we know Marga best as being the CEO at Kawarti Kids. Welcome, Marga.
Thank you so much, Kathy, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm thrilled to be here, and I love my work as an OT. I never, ever wanted to be anything else than an OT. I'm happy to talk to all of you.
Oh, well, we were delighted that you you accepted. So let's just go the right amount back to when you started your private practice. Yeah, when was it? Where was it?
Oh, it was a very long time ago. It was in South Africa, and I actually found myself, after I got married, in a rural area, and there were not very much services around there. And one of the other OTs contacted me and said, can't you please start a private practice because there are so many kids that need you and nobody to provide the services. And I said, well, I have no idea how to do that. At that stage, there were about 3 or 4 private practices in South Africa. But then I went to her and she helped me to set it all up, and I started, and I have not regretted one single day. So since then, I have been working with kids mostly, and I did, you know, I got a lot of experience from the business side of things as well, because I was literally thrown in at the deep end.
And that first year or two, was it what you thought it was going to be?
No, not at all. I was very nervous, of course. I tapped the mind of this OT quite a bit. She lived quite a distance from me, but she helped me quite a lot. And the only thing that she wanted in return was that I will promise her to help other young OTs as well. So that is what I try to do today. So I love to do that. I found it very difficult to work without support. So what I did throughout the years was to regularly visit other private practices and just kept that good communication going. I have never been, and I will never be, in competition with other private practices or with other allied health professionals. I just want to collaborate and to learn from them and to share what I have learned. By doing that, I also created some interest groups throughout the years, and that has consisted of OTs, but also of other allied health professionals. And then I have attended as many meetings and trainings as I could, just to get that support from my peers and my colleagues.
Yeah. How quickly did your business grow in those first couple of years?
Well, I had this business along with my first children, so it grew really slowly because I never wanted to be a full-time working mum, and I didn't need to. I was very fortunate that I had to work for pocket money and for the enjoyment of my work. So, but, you know, during those years, as my kids grew up, I got this feeling of, oh, life is passing and I'm not getting anywhere in my career, and I'm not getting anywhere. My practice is just staying so small. And that was, you know, that pushed me into working harder and harder. And then you get to the stage where you really have to think about what you're doing and what is the essential part of your life, and where do you want to put the most energy in. So I always had that, you know, that bouncing between family life and my professional career.
Do you remember how you used to manage the work and home piece?
Yes, I tried various options, of course. We all do trials, and it works, and then it doesn't work, and so on. But at first, my practice was just next door to my house, so that was very convenient. It was very difficult when you said goodbye at 5 o'clock for the last client, and your three kids stand at the window and say, "Oh, Mommy, play with us, please." And you just, I really don't want to see a child now. But anyway.
Kind of all played out.
Yes. But so I had to compromise there, and I had to just decide, like, listen, I'm not going to work until 5 o'clock. I'll stop at 4 o'clock so that I have time for my own children. And that worked out quite well. I also had my computer in my living room so that I could write my reports in my living room while my kids did other tasks. Until the day that one of my kids looked up and said, "Oh, it's so lovely to be at home when Daddy is in his office working and you are typing on your computer." And it was like a bucket of cold water in my face. Oh. And I thought, this is not the memory I want to create in my children. So out went the computer. And from then on, they were still very small. From then on, it was work in my workplace and family in my home. And that helped quite a lot. And I still do it that way. I don't have little kids anymore, but I have my office. And my office is downstairs. And when I'm here, I'm working. And when I go upstairs, I don't work. So it's as easy as that. And I find that really helps. The other thing that helps is to actually book in times in advance. So book a family holiday in advance and don't change those bookings. Book a coffee with a friend, book a massage, but do it 3, 4, 5 weeks in advance. So when you have time on your schedule, otherwise you just never get to do it. If you say that, "Oh, I'll do it when I have time," you'll never have time. So you absolutely have to do that in family time, holiday time, personal time. You have to put it in your schedule.
Oh, absolutely. And your generous sharing about the laptop lifestyle and the laptop lounge room are going to resonate. I hear that scenario a lot of trying to do the work and the kid thing and not always doing either to 100%. So, yeah, it's interesting that you what worked for you was the differentiated workplaces. You know, the whole hot seating and mobile scenario isn't always supportive. And I also like to have a workspace and a living space. I work from home and occasionally my laptop will make a guest appearance somewhere else. But my work pretty much stays in my room.
Yeah, I find that easier. Something I did not mention is that I've been working for so long that I'm actually a grandmother by now, with adult kids. So, but, you know, even my daughter said once, this multitasking is just, you know, she can do this and this and that all at the same time. And I looked at her and I said, "You can't. You think you can, but you're just wasting a lot of time jumping from one task to the other. Finish one and then get to the other one." I still do that. Sometimes I just see on my phone there's an important message from somebody that I have to reply to. Then, you know, sometimes you do that, but when it's urgent, but it should not be a habit and it should not be a lifestyle to think that you can do multitasking. Mm, mm. I told my daughter it's out of fashion, do something else.
How do you manage time across your week at the moment?
At the moment, I find it also a bit challenging because I'm doing 2 days at a private practice, a multidisciplinary private practice, which I love. I love my clinical work with clients. And then I do 2 days or sometimes Saturdays as well on Co-Audit Kids, which I'll talk about that business now because it was an expansion from my private practice work. I do one day, I look after my only Australian grandchild. So he is 3 years old now. And since he was one, I look after him one day per week. And it's just a lovely time with him. And I don't do any emails. And I don't do anything when he's here. I just play with him. And that is awesome to see that little child developing with such good self-confidence and feeling so much love that I just said to my husband, I wish we could do that with every child on this earth, to just have one day with a person that absolutely adores you and do nothing else.
Oh, the champion, absolute yes. champion. How magical, how absolutely, absolutely magical.
It is.
We will get to Kawadi Kids, but when did you move from South Africa to Australia and what was that transition like professionally?
Yes, so also in just to talk a little bit more of my journey is that at some stage in my private practice life, I decided, you know, to see – you know, maximum 20, 25 kids per week. And I want to do more than that. Mm. So I did some research, and when I did my master's, I did research on the 0 to 3 care that they have in South Africa. And then out of that, I developed a franchise called Better Babies, which was daycare centers, because there was a big need for specifically the age group 0 to 3. And it didn't work very well because it is quite expensive, as you know, that if you look at the prices of childcare, and people just couldn't pay it. And there was, of course, no government rebate. So it was just too expensive. But just after that, we emigrated. So that was about 14 years ago. And when I arrived in Australia, I looked for a job at a private practice, and I started to work at an OT private practice, which was fantastic, but it was a little bit far away from where I lived. So I got hold of this multidisciplinary private practice, which did not have occupational therapy, and they did not have a strong pediatric team. So I offered my services to them, and they accepted. So I'm still working there 2 days a week.
Wow. Mm. And all in Brisbane?
All in Brisbane, yes. We've been in Brisbane all the time. You know, once you settle, you're reluctant to move again. Mm. It's a big move to move countries. And, so we have a good circle of friends, and we have a good life here, so we'll probably stay here. What I also did arriving here was also I felt lonely. So once again, especially when I started at the multidisciplinary practice, because there weren't anybody else focusing on children, and once again, I started an interest group, and that I invited people from that private practice, but also from other, anybody that I could hold of, anybody whose name and email address I could get, I just invited to these interest groups, and it was fantastic that people came actually, and we had good discussions and we had good topics to talk about, and of course I built my network by doing that, and then I encouraged other disciplines to work at the same private practice, and now I'm head of a team of 8-9 pediatric allied health professionals, so that's good. It has grown quite a bit.
Oh, sounds wonderful. So when did you first sort of start thinking about Kawadi Kids?
Once again, I was working and I was thinking that I want to do more than only see these kids that I can see per week. And at that time, my colleague said to me, can I just please give her an outline of what I do with a child? Because I got quite good results. And she saw that I was working according to a plan, but she didn't know what my plan is. And I looked at her and I said, oh, it's all in my head. I don't know how to put it out on a piece of paper. But in the end, I did exactly that because I realized there are, I get to a stage in therapy where I feel this child has a lot of foundational skills. They need to improve their motor skills. Especially their gross motor skills, balance, core muscles. Many of those can be improved by doing exercises at home at a regular basis. So then I would give those exercises to parents, and then often they don't do it. If they can do it at home, then it leaves my hands free to focus on the more cognitive skills, executive functioning, to focus on visual perception, But if they don't do it at home and they don't do it correctly, you see a plateau in the child's development or his progress in therapy. So then I decided, well, the best way to do that will be to put these exercises into videos. And when we started to do that, I actually sat down and I wrote my program, which follows the neurodevelopmental principles, and it follows some of the sensory integration principles as well. And I've put that down in a program, a graded program, which parents can do at home. And now I find it very helpful to use that program at home while my hands are free to do other things in therapy sessions. And we have also a number of parents who just do it at home, and they just tap into therapy every now and then, or with their own therapist or by my consulting services. Mm. And it really works better than I thought it would.
Yeah, it's such a magnificent example of your intellectual property and getting it out of your head and into a program. What was your business thinking around Kawadi Kids at the beginning?
Well, I didn't think it will work at all. My husband was my good motivator, and he said, go for it. And in the end, I did. But I just felt, who on earth will buy my programs? I mean, who am I? I'm just an OT. But anyway, so I just see that many young therapists really put a lot of value in that, because it's all worked out for them and they don't have to do that. They can just follow that program, and either in therapy sessions or they can give it to parents to do at home.
So now the Kawadi Kids program is used all over the world?
Yes. And I have providers. We're going to change the name from provider to consultants, but anyway, provider or consultant. Yes, I have one in various, you know, consultants in various countries. Amongst them is Ireland, and UK one is just in the process of purchasing that, and one in US, one in two in South Africa, and a few in Australia. So that's very exciting.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. What do you think the next developmental step for Kawadi Kids is going to be?
I am, from a therapy point of view, I would like to expand the services of Kawadi Kids either into other programs. We have expanded from the initial child program that they can do at home to a kindy program, which is for groups of kids in a kindy 4 to 6 years old, so kindy year one, or actually kindy prep. So we have done that already, and we have also created the class one for those movement breaks in the classrooms. It's only 5 minutes, so it's great. And the teacher doesn't have to prep anything. They just put the video on, kids do it for 5 minutes, continue with their work. From there on, I would like to expand the services so they can access consulting from me, but it will be great to have other professionals as well, and ally health professionals, which they can, which minds my clients can tap. So I think I would, from my point of view as a therapist, I would like to expand that. As a business, I think I have to hang on to what I have and just make that bigger, and perhaps expand a little bit later.
Mm. What have you learned about the business side of things, maybe just with Kawadi Kids in particular?
Yes, well, I didn't study business. I'm not a business person.
Not many OTs do.
No. Yeah. I definitely, continuously people ask me what's the price of the program, and I have to look at the website because I forget. I'm not, my mind's not on money. But the business, but the main thing I have learned is, even with the private practice as well, is keep going. Make sure you know where you're going and keep going. You need to believe in what you're doing. You need to believe in, you have to gain knowledge. You have to gain some experience, and you have to gain self-confidence that you know where you're going, and keep going. Just keep going. You'll get there. And if you, have a big picture, a huge, lovely goal in front of you, and then have little goals for every day, bigger goals for weekly, monthly, And when you wipe your eyes, you'll be there where you wanted to be.
Have you been a business owner that's been really motivated by business plans and a strategy or not?
Yes, I think so. You know, the same way that I have the therapy plan in my head, I have a business plan in my head as well. Whenever I speak to business people, I can resonate with what they're saying and I can understand what they're saying. And so it's not as if it's a completely blank page for me, but I think we need to upskill a little bit on that, because it's not usually integrated in our training as allied health professionals. I did a few business courses over the years, and private practice courses, what you provide, and I have done that, and that helped me a lot just to get my mind from therapy into a little bit more, because you need that when you do a private practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really cool that you drew a parallel against the therapeutic process, because the principles are just so similar. You set a goal and you do the task analysis and you sequence the event and you have some milestones along the way and you're measuring progress. Before you know it, you open your eyes and voila, you're there.
Perhaps they teach us a very good business model. They just don't call it. They call it the therapy model.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes. The other thing that I have found in my business is that, and that's one thing that the initial OT who helped me said, is that, just be professional at all times. So if you, the way you dress, the way you present yourself, the way you talk to people, the way you write reports, get a logo, get a professional name, be professional. Then people will have respect for you. And the other thing that I learned was with marketing, and marketing can be very tricky because there are a lot of people in this world who is very keen to market your product. And one thing that my husband has been busy with various businesses through his life, and of course I've been, if nothing else, a soundboard for him. But, he always said, well, if somebody who says he's going to market your business can market your business as well as he can market himself, that is a win recipe. So that one just need to check that. I don't say all of them do it, but you need to check, because you need, and I think in our line of business, word of mouth is just the best way to go. It seems like it's a very slow way to go, but what is Facebook? What is the social media? It's all word of mouth. We chat with a friend on the phone. Nowadays, we just post on Facebook and we talk with 20 friends at one time, but we still have that communication. So I don't know, what you feel about that. I would love to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I also believe that we are people, and we're in the business of relationships and optimism and practicalities as well. And we naturally have occurring networks, referral networks in the work that we do. I tend to hear, though, in the busyness of business, some of those things get a little just dropped, not neglected. Everyone knows that they have to do this and that, and they should be talking with so-and-so. But it's not always a connection that extra service and teaming around the child in this case, that's not always perceived as networking. It's perceived as good professional practice. And so sometimes just by reframing it a little, just everyone gets, people get a little bit more enthused about connecting and messaging what they do and why they do it, and feeling a little bit more confident to talk about the business side of things rather than always focusing on the client. So word of mouth, super important, but you need a wide range. I think a wider range than you think you need. And then for the online, the digital marketing, I call it word of mouth. And you're absolutely right. It's still a message. It's still communicating. It's a little different to the way you would use your words face to face. But yeah, I feel that you need both, but you need great awareness about how to do word of mouth and how to do word of mouth and having some strategy, just the right amount of practical strategy sitting behind it.
Yeah. And yes, and I think part of that word of mouth, and whichever way we do it, is also to really look after your clients and really provide an excellent service. That in itself will grow your business. And you know, that, as I said, be professional, but also support, interact, give feedback, just that connections all the time, that is so important.
So from a business point of view, what are you proud of?
I think I have created something that can help many children. And I'm in the process of, you know, giving this program to an orphanage, to kids with really big care needs in schools in South Africa. And I will be very proud if I can make a difference in those kids. So that is perhaps once again my therapy. You know, as I said, I'm not a business person, but from a business point of view, I think I'm proud about this program that I created, because I will be able to help more people when they use the program.
Very much impact and legacy are the words that I would use to kind of summarize what you said, that you now have a product that can reach way beyond you working in front of a child or working with a family one-on-one, that you can reach globally far and wide now.
Yes, hopefully it will expand. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. So one of the questions that I sometimes ask, and I think it's really relevant now, is if there was just a magical moment and there was an extra $50,000, no questions asked, in your bank account tomorrow, what would you do with it business-wise?
I would be delighted, first of all.
When you picked yourself up off the floor.
Yes, then I would probably, I will definitely use it to improve the marketing so that we can expand to, for instance, other countries, and to improve the services of the members. So the members are the people who have bought the program. They are my members, and I look at them as being my client, and I want to care for them. So I have to do it quite indirectly. I have to do a newsletter if I can't talk to them, but at least I can do that. So I would like to improve that service, and I would like to improve the services that I provide, to expand from OT to other disciplines as well. I think that will be really fantastic. And the other option would, you can see I will use that in 2 minutes, all the money.
No, keep going. Maybe it will happen again.
Yeah, research projects will be great, so that we can actually prove that these programs are evidence-based. I know it works, and I know there is a lot of evidence behind the theories, but we haven't done a full pilot study yet of a research project, and that will be great to do that. Yes, so that's the main things I will do.
Well, so that you can get all of that done, the Magic Money Fairy will probably drop $100K in, but it's well deserved. Well deserved.
That will be great. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Yes. We won't tell anyone. Okay. We won't tell anyone. So there's plans to kind of broaden the base of Kawadi Kids, bring in some other allied health kind of disciplines, market it, get it out internationally. Is there anything else, any other sort of secret dreams sitting there for where you would like it to end up?
Yes, I would expand the programs to the early intervention, really early intervention, like premies.
It would
be a totally different kind of program, but at least just to get that message out that you can do so much in the pre-3 years, and in the very early development of a child. There's a lot of education going on, and there is a lot of information available on the internet, but I still see so many babies left in car seats for long periods of time, you know, just not doing what is the best for that child. And yes, and I would love to spend time, and I don't think programs in itself will be the best thing. I think it has to be a really interactive and, you know, education something. Yeah. And that I would love to do that, and to take that also to poor countries. And I look at these refugee camps and I think,
oh gosh,
can't there be something for these people? Just a few toys, you know, something. Mm. Because I don't know, perhaps we don't see the fantastic places where those kids can play, but we don't see this on the TV. And I might just, my heart will just breaks if I see kids growing up there. So, you know, I would love to expand to those areas as well.
Wow. Goodness me.
Life is too short.
Yeah.
Somebody else has to take over.
And in between all of this impact and connecting people and coaching families, you've written a couple of books. Tell us about how the books came about.
Oh, yes. The first one was, I wrote it in Afrikaans, and the Afrikaans version means how to intelligently stimulate your child. But the English version came out like sensory stimulation, which can be interpreted in many different ways. Mm-hmm. So, and I couldn't change the name of the book because I went through a publisher, but that is for the development of a child in the from 0 to 3. And that is a parent book. And it's written for parents to explain how a child develops and why is it important to do specific exercises and how to address the you know, the little terrible twos and stuff like that, is all addressed in the book. So that book, I'm quite proud of the book, but I'm so sad about the name because it's just also now something that I don't like to promote because the name is not something that I like to promote. So, but the other one is Stories of Hope, which is an ebook and it's on our website. And that is literally stories of kids that I saw in therapy. And I tell the story of what happened, what the child looked like, what happened after we improved the sensory motor skills in that child. And it's just, there's so many things that fall into place then. And I just have an example of a baby, example of a preschooler, example of a primary school child, example of an ASD child, and I just give feedback on all of that and say what happened. And it's real true stories. It's not real names, but it's true stories.
What an amazing treasure chest. I don't believe there's enough storytelling in what we do. So it was one of my motivations for the podcast was to capture people's stories.
That's a great idea.
How did you find the writing process?
I love writing. I love writing for the public. I love writing for parents. I'm not a good writer when it comes to academics, so I found my research study for my master's quite difficult, literally because of that kind of writing, the academic writing. But I love to write. That's not a problem for me. I really love writing.
Do you have a couple more books inside ready to?
No, I spend my time now on the blogs for the website.
Yeah.
I don't write all of them myself. I have a blog writer, but I have to check everything and everything has to sound as if I have written it, so it has to be correct.
We
so
won't
I
tell often, anyone
I
about
often
that.
Do corrections. Yeah, I often do corrections on that because it doesn't resonate what I believe, or not what I believe, but it's not how I would explain something. So that keeps me quite busy at the moment. And I think that is possibly the way going forward. I'm not sure how well books are read by many people. I think blogs are easier because it's short and sweet and you can read it in a few seconds, few minutes while you wait for your doctor or whatever.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting that we're sort of so time poor that we're choosing to kind of listen to something. I consume quite a lot of my books at the moment via audio when I'm driving or walking or doing something else. So to the extent that I picked up a book to read last night and a family member stopped at the doorway and said, "You're holding a book like a real paper thing, like back in the old days." And I said, "I know, it's quite remarkable." And my hands got sore. It was absolutely tragic. But I only had a paper version of this particular book and I really wanted to be able to get in and write on it and put some sticky notes around. But yeah, it was quite an experience going back to a real book. Yes.
I'm personally a very visual person and a visual learner, so I prefer books. And I still go to the library and I read my books. But I find it difficult to listen to audios because I unless I can doodle or draw or do something else. But if I only listen, I just either fall asleep or I don't listen. I daydream.
Yeah, you get distracted. It's been a muscle that I've had to develop, but I really wanted to be able to concentrate for long enough to listen to a book. So I'm getting better.
Yes. It's something I think that I need to practice as well. I don't drive long distances at the moment. So I think, once I have to do that, then I will definitely listen to books because that's the best way to get through a lot of time when you're on your own.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. What I want to kind of change direction a little bit and ask you your thoughts about the changes that you've seen in private practice since your time in Australia, because we've had the Helping Children with Autism and Better Start funding coming in. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the NDIS. What have you observed from the private practice point of view in the last few years?
Yes, well, first of all, when I came here, I was surprised at how much funding people get and how much they complain about how little they get, because in a country like South Africa, you just don't get it. You just pay for everything. So, and that I was surprised that people will say, well, I've got 10 sessions for this year, and that's what I'm going to use. I'm not going to pay for anything more. And I was just, what? We just pay for it, you know? So that was a surprise for me. But since I arrived here, I think what the big change was, there's funding coming through. And I see with the NDIS, I see clients with multiple difficulties and problems and which I have not seen before. I love to see them because we can do so much to assist them, but I don't think they accessed private practices before. I don't know where they went.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yep, yeah, those clients that may not have engaged in the private sector at all.
Yes, exactly. And now we see them, so that is a bit of a change. I see many more private practices popping up everywhere. It wasn't as common when I arrived. I don't think so. I might have, my perception might not have been very good, but I think there are quite a bit more. And I think also there are quite a bit more pediatric private practices than there used to be. Whether it is because it's a more popular place to work, I'm not sure. In South Africa, we had a lot, most of us moved into private practice because there wasn't a lot of funding available, so there weren't a lot of jobs in the hospitals. So we were forced to do that. But times have changed there as well. But I think that was about the major thing that I observed. You are much more hands-on with many private practitioners.
Yeah, absolutely. Parallel observations to you, Marga, that there was growth in small businesses starting up with the HACWA and Better Start funding. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just in the cities. There was actually need in regional towns, regional cities as well. So perhaps Metro led the way, but very, very quickly was allied health business owners in more rural areas. And I guess the NDIS, you know, there was a absolute proliferation in those trial sites. And that the private practices were somewhat differently agile and able to meet need, and that they had some confidence and experience with fees and invoicing and billing and time for money and what service looked like. And certainly in the last 2 or 3 years, it's been interesting. There's been more opening up, but there's possibly also been more businesses just not so much closing, but putting the brakes on, putting the limits on. Some are closing. And I guess this is all signs of maturity, signs of growing pains. Businesses are being purchased and sold all of the time, and you might never know at a superficial level. The marketplace is becoming increasingly competitive, and not everyone's comfortable with that. And all through our experience as private practitioners, our customers are learning super, super fast as well. And they're having access to funds that they never thought they would dream that they would have to manage. And they're making their decisions about what a good provider for them is, and talking about what they'll get and what they won't get, and comparing and contrasting and purchasing on value and price and all of these other things. So, if you think back over the last 2 or 3 years, it's quite mind-boggling to think about what the next 5 years is going to be, as hopefully there's a little bit more maturity. I'm not going to use the word stability because I don't want to disappoint anyone with the NDIS. Yes. But I suspect it will be an ongoing period of change and maturity and comings and goings. And the landscape will continue to define itself and be very unsettled, I guess, in the next couple of years.
NDIS only rolled out in Brisbane in July last year, so it's only a year for us now. And we had a lot of frustrations and a lot of very exciting moments. Mm-hmm. But yes, we need to see what's going to happen in the future. I think we need to learn from all of you who have been involved for quite a bit.
Yeah, and also learn with our customers as well, and to engage with customers a little bit differently other than the therapeutic process. I'm doing air quotes, which I do all the time on the podcast, but are never very useful. And to actually work with our customers, our current and our future customers, to think about what they want and what they don't want. It may not always be about what we want to do as business owners, but to be responsive at times as well. And I think that's going to be a really interesting one in the next little while as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's exciting times actually, but excitement always goes with a little bit of frustration as well. So we'll have to accept that and work around that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I'm going to give you the last moment. We have a couple of minutes up our sleeve. Is there, what else would you like to share with business owners?
Well, I expect that most of them will be a bit younger than I am. And what I want to give to young business owners is that when I was young, and I think I have said it, I thought, oh, my life is just going past, and I don't have time to build my career and blah, blah, blah. There's so many things to do. And I really want you to reflect and to sit and think what is the important things to do at the moment. Because life is quite long. It's much longer than you think it is when you're 30 or 40 years old. And I was surprised to see when my kids left my house when they were adults and they left that, oh my word, they are decades for me to work. I still have 20 or more years that I could easily work and build my business and build. So, and now I just spoke to somebody yesterday and she said, oh, she's going to have a baby now and she doesn't know what to do with the business and blah, blah, blah. And her boss doesn't want her to go on maternity leave and she doesn't know what to do. I said to her, you know what? After my first child, I just closed my practice for 3 years. I just closed it and I opened it again. And now when I think back, 3 years was nothing. At that time, it was a big issue for me to make that decision. But now, if thinking back, it's nothing. It's 40 years, by the way. So it's a long time. But, you know, over the stretch of your life and over the stretch of your business life, 2 or 3 years are not a long time. And just consider that you don't mess up that with your family, because that time you can't get again. Business time you can get it. That's easy to get again, and you will get it. As I said, life is quite long. And I think that's the main message I want to give to people, is really have that balance between work and family.
I could listen to you all day. Sounds absolutely marvelous. And I just totally agree. Business is a marathon. Life is a marathon rather than a sprint under the best possible circumstances. So thank you so much for sharing up your adventure to date and sharing up your thoughts on work and life and business and the future. Thanks, Marga.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Kathy. It was lovely to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.